We're continuing Chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And if you remember, Harry was in Dumbledore's office and Dumbledore was about to show him a memory. Harry bent forward, took a deep breath, and plunged his face into the silvery substance. He felt his feet leave the office floor. He was falling through whirling darkness, and then, quite suddenly, he was blinking in dazzling sunlight. Before his eyes had adjusted, Dumbledore landed beside him. They were standing in a country lane bordered by high, tangled hedgerows, beneath a summer sky as bright and blue as a forget-me-not. Some 10 feet in front of them stood a short, plump man, wearing enormously thick glasses that reduced his eyes to mole-like specks. He was reading a wooden signpost that was sticking out of the brambles on the left-hand side of the road. Harry knew this must be Ogden. He was the only person in sight, and he was also wearing the strange assortment of clothes so often chosen by inexperienced wizards trying to look like muggles. In this case, a frock coat and spats over a striped one-piece bathing costume. Before Harry had time to do more than register his bizarre appearance, however, Ogden had set off at a brisk walk down the lane. Dumbledore and Harry followed. As they passed the wooden sign, Harry looked up at its two arms. The one pointing back the way they came read, "Great Hingleton."
I have one thing to say.
Yes?
So this is the Pensieve, right?
Yes.
Okay. But if you go in the Pensieve, then aren't you supposed to see it from that person's perspective? Because it's their memory, and they don't see themselves.
Mm-hmm. That is a little suspicious, isn't it?
Just had to point it out.
I mean, you're right. It would make a lot more sense if they literally saw it from their perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that is what they should do.
Yeah. Totes. I'm in agreement.
Otherwise, this is, like, a way more amazing, like, magic than anybody knows, because it just means that, like, if you experienced it, you can extract the, like, the scene, which means to be used in courts and stuff.
Right. Well, I think it was used in courts. Remember? Wasn't there some court scene that they saw?
Right, but the other thing is, like, people can mess with their memories and stuff like that, and, like, I don't
know. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure you can fake this, like, with a good memory charm, or maybe if you're, like, a good Occlumens or something.
Maybe. Okay, keep going.
Okay. The one pointing back the way they had come read, "Great Hingleton, 5 miles." The arm pointing after Ogden said, "Little Hingleton, 1 mile." I guess the two Hingletons are 6 miles apart. Huh. They walked a short way with nothing to see but the hedgerows, the wide blue sky overhead, and the swishing, frock-coated figure ahead. Then the lane curved to the left and fell away, sloping steeply down a hillside, so that they had a sudden, unexpected view of a whole valley laid out in front of them. Harry could see a village, undoubtedly Little Hingleton, nestled between two steep hills, its church and graveyard clearly visible. Across the valley, set on the opposite hillside, was a handsome manor, surrounded by a wide expanse of velvety green lawn. Ogden had broken into a reluctant trot due to the steep downward slope. Dumbledore lengthened his stride, and Harry hurried to keep up. He thought Little Hingleton must be their final destination, and wondered, as he had done on the night they had found Slughorn, why they'd had to approach it from such a distance. He soon discovered that he was mistaken in thinking that they were going to the village, however. The lane curved to the right, and when they rounded the corner, it was to see the very edge of Ogden's frock coat vanishing through a gap in the hedge. Dumbledore and Harry followed him onto a narrow dirt road, bordered by higher and wilder hedgerows than they had left behind. The path was crooked, rocky, and potholed, sloping downward like the last one, and it seemed to be headed for a patch of dark trees a little below them. Sure enough, the track soon to open up at the copse, and Dumbledore and Harry came to a halt behind Ogden, who had stopped and drawn his wand. Despite the cloudless sky, the old trees cast deep, dark, cool shadows, and it was a few seconds before Harry's eyes discerned the building half hidden amongst the tangle of trunks. It seemed to him a very strange location to choose for a house, or else an odd decision to leave the trees growing nearby, blocking all light and the view of the valley below. He wondered whether it was inhabited. Its walls were mossy, and so many tiles had fallen off the roof that the rafters were visible in places. Nettles grew all around it, their tips reaching the windows, which were tiny and thick with grime. Just as he had concluded that nobody could possibly be living there, however, one of the windows was thrown open with a clatter, and a thin trickle of steam or smoke issued from it as though somebody was cooking. Ogden moved forward rather cautiously. As the dark shadows of the trees slid over him, he stopped staring at the front door, to which someone had nailed a dead snake. Then there was a rustle and a crack, and a man in rags dropped from the nearest tree, landing on his feet right in front of Ogden, who leapt backward so fast he stood on the tails of his frock coat and stumbled. "You're not welcome." The man standing before them had thick hair so matted with dirt it could have been any color. Several of his teeth were missing. His eyes were small and dark and stared in opposite directions. He might have looked comical, but he did not. The effect was frightening, and Harry could not blame Ogden for backing away several more paces before he spoke. "Good morning. I'm from the Ministry of Magic."
"You're not welcome."
"I'm sorry, I don't understand you," said Ogden nervously. Harry thought Ogden was being extremely dim. The stranger was making himself very clear, in Harry's opinion, particularly as he was brandishing a wand in one hand and a short and rather bloody knife in the other. "You understand him, I'm sure, Harry," said Dumbledore quietly. "Yes, of course," said Ogden, slightly nonplussed. "Why can't Ogden..." But as his eyes found the dead snake on the door again, he suddenly understood. "He's speaking Parseltongue?" "Very good," said Dumbledore, nodding and smiling. The man in rags was now advancing on Ogden, knife in one hand, wand in the other. "Now look," Ogden began, but too late. There was a bang, and Ogden was on the ground, clutching his nose while a nasty yellowish goo squirted from between his fingers. "Morphin," said a loud voice. An elderly man had come hurrying out of the cottage, banging the door behind him so that the dead snake swung pathetically. This man was shorter than the first, and oddly proportioned. His shoulders were very broad, and his arms overlong, which, with his bright brown eyes, short scrubby hair, and wrinkled face, gave him the look of a powerful aged monkey. He came to a halt beside the man with a knife, who was now cackling with laughter at the sight of Ogden on the ground. "Ministry, is it?" said the older man, looking down at Ogden. "Correct," said Ogden angrily, dabbing his face. "And you, I take it, are Mr. Gaunt?"
"That's right," said Gaunt. "Got you in the face, did he?"
"Yes, he did," snapped Ogden.
"Should have made your presence known, shouldn't you?" said Gaunt aggressively. "This is private property. Can't just walk in here and not expect my son to defend himself."
"Defend himself against what, man?" said Ogden, clambering back to his feet. "Busybodies, intruders, muggles and filth." Ogden pointed his wand at his own nose, which was still issuing large amounts of what looked like yellow pus, and the flow stopped at once. Mr. Gaunt spoke out of the corner of his mouth to Morphin.
"Get in the house. Don't argue."
This time, ready for it, Harry recognized Parseltongue. Even while he could understand what was being said, he distinguished the weird hissing noise that was all Ogden could hear. Morphin seemed to be on the point of disagreeing, but when his father cast him a threatening look, he changed his mind, lumbering away to the cottage with an odd rolling gait and slamming the front door behind him so that the snake swung sadly again. "It's your son I'm here to see, Mr. Gaunt," said Ogden as he mopped the last of the pus from the front of his coat. "That was Morphin, wasn't it?"
"Ah, that was Morphin," said the old man.
"Are you pure blood?" he asked, suddenly aggressive. "It's neither here nor there," said Ogden coldly, and Harry felt his respect for Ogden rise. Apparently Gaunt felt rather differently. He squinted into Ogden's face and muttered in what was clearly supposed to be an offensive tone. "Now I've come to think about it, I've seen noses like yours down in the village." "I don't doubt it if your son's been let loose on him," said Ogden.
Perhaps we can continue this discussion inside. Inside? Yes, Mr. Gaunt, I've already told you. I'm here about Morphin. We sent an owl. Got no use for owls, said Gaunt. I don't open letters. Then you can hardly complain when you get no warning of visitors, said Ogden tartly. I'm here following a serious breach of wizarding law which occurred here early in the early hours this morning. All right, all right, all right, bellowed Gaunt. Come in the bleeding house, then. Much good it'll do you. The house seemed to contain three tiny rooms. Two doors led off to the main room, which served as a kitchen and living room combined. Morphin was sitting in a filthy armchair beside the smoking fire, twisting a live adder between his thick fingers and crooning softly at it in Parseltongue. Hissy, hissy, little snakey, slither on the floor. You be good to Morphin, or he'll nail you to the door. There was a scuffling noise in the corner beside the open window, and Harry realized there was someone else in the room, a girl whose ragged gray dress was the exact color of the dirty stone wall behind her. She was standing beside a steaming pot on a grimy black stove and was fiddling around with a shelf of squalid-looking pots and pans above it. Her hair was lank and dull, and she had a pale, plain, rather heavy face. Her eyes, like her brother's, stared in opposite directions. She looked a little cleaner than two men, but Harry thought he had never seen a more defeated-looking person. "My daughter, Merope," said Gaunt grudgingly, as Ogden looked inquiringly toward her. "Good morning," said Ogden. She did not answer, but with a frightened glance as her father turned her back on the room and continued shifting the pots on the wall behind her. "Well, Mr. Gaunt," said Ogden, "to get straight to the point, we have reason to believe that your son, Morphin, performed magic in front of a muggle late last night." There was a deafening clang. Merope had dropped one of the pots. "Pick it up," Gaunt bellowed at her. "That's it. Grub on the floor like some filthy muggle. What's your wand for, you useless sack of muck?" "Mr. Gaunt, please," said Ogden in a shocked voice as Merope, who had already picked up the pot, flushed blotchily scarlet, lost her grip on the pot again, and drew her wand shakily from her pocket, pointed at the pot, and muttered a hasty, inaudible spell that caused the pot to shoot away across the floor, hit the opposite wall, and crack into two. Morphin let out a mad cackle of laughter. Gaunt screamed, "Mend it, you pointless lump, mend it!" Merope stumbled across the room, but before she had time to raise her wand, Ogden had lifted his own and said firmly, "Reparo." The pot mended itself instantly. Gaunt looked for a moment as though he was going to shout at Ogden, but seemed to think better at it. Instead, he jeered at his daughter. "Lucky the nice man from the ministry is here, isn't it? Perhaps he'll take you off my hands. Perhaps he doesn't mind dirty squibs." Without looking at anybody or thinking Ogden, Merope picked up the pot and returned it, hands trembling, to the shelf. She then stood quite still, her back against the wall between the filthy window and the stove, as though she wished for nothing more than to sink into the stone and vanish. "Mr. Gaunt," Ogden began again, "as I've said, the reason for my visit..." "I heard you the first time," snapped Gaunt. "And so what?" Morphin gave a muggle a bit of what was coming to him. "What about it, then?" "Morphin has broken wizarding law," said Ogden sternly. "Morphin has broken wizarding law," Gaunt imitated Ogden's voice, making it pompous and sing-song. Morphin cackled. "He taught him a filthy muggle a lesson that's illegal now, is it?" "Yes," said Ogden, "I'm afraid it is." He pulled from inside an inside pocket a small scroll of parchment and unrolled it. "What's that, then, his sentence?" said Gaunt, his voice rising angrily. "It is a summons to the ministry for a hearing." "Summons? Summons? Who do you think you are, summoning my son anywhere?" "I'm the head of the magical law enforcement squad," said Ogden. "Do you think we're scum, do you?" screamed Gaunt, advancing on Ogden now with a dirty yellow-nailed finger pointing at his chest. "Scum who will come running when the ministry tells him to? Do you know who you're talking to, you filthy little mudblood, do you?" "I was under the impression I was speaking to Mr. Gaunt," said Ogden, looking wary, but standing his ground. "That's right," roared Gaunt. For a moment, Harry thought Gaunt was making an obscene gesture, but then realized he was showing Ogden the ugly black stoned ring he was wearing on his middle finger. See this? Know where it's what it is? Know where it's come from? Centuries it's been in our family. That's how far back we go. And pure blood all the way. Know how much I've been offered for this with the Peveril coat of arms engraved on the stone? I've really no idea, said Ogden, blinking at as the ring sailed within an inch of his nose. And it's quite beside the point, Mr. Gaunt. Your son has committed. With a howl of rage, Gaunt ran toward his daughter. For a split second, Harry thought he was going to throttle her as his hand flew to her throat. Next moment, he was dragging her toward Ogden by a gold chain around her neck. See this, he bellowed at Ogden, shaking a heavy gold locket at him, while Merope spluttered and gasped for breath. I see it, said Ogden hastily. Slytherins, yelled Gaunt. Salazar Slytherins were his last living descendants. Would he say to that, eh? Mr. Gaunt, your daughter, said Ogden in alarm, but Gaunt had already released Merope. She staggered away from him, back to her corner, massaging her neck and gulping for air. So, said Gaunt triumphantly, as though he had just proved a complicated point beyond all possible dispute. Don't you go talking to us as if we're dirt on your shoes. Generations of purebloods, wizards all, and more than you can say, I don't doubt. And he spat at the floor at Ogden's feet. Morfin cackled again. Merope, huddled beside the window, her head bowed and her face hidden by the lank hair, said nothing. And I think we'll stop there. It's bedtime for the pup and the kitten. I love you so much, baby kitten. Sleep well, my darling. Good night.